Blog Talk Radio.
The cost left my heart broken, so I had it closed for repair. Wandering in my desert, your oasis appears. You're like a long, cool drink of water. I'm thirsty, that's clear when I taste you. I know you, I know you, I do. So can you feel it? Tell me I need to know.
Everybody, it's Mark Rawson. I'd like to welcome you to another night of the Men's Spiritual Hour. As you know, we run this show once a month, and you know, we have hundreds and hundreds of shows. We've done tons of interviews, and you know, everybody knows from listening to the show that me and Mike put this together so that we could have an opportunity to bring on some spiritual leaders, you know, people who are leaders in the health industry and different modalities that, you know, basically represent men in the area of development, no matter how they got there and stuff like that. So we're always excited to see who we're going to have on for guests. If you miss any part of this radio show, you can get it on replay. It'll be available on replay about 10 minutes after the show is over. And we just want to remind everybody tonight that we are not going to be taking any callers. I say that because I know we do get quite a bit of callers who call in, mostly because the radio show puts the phone number up on the website for everybody. There's a couple links that we're going to be promoting for our guests this evening. As always, a lot of people miss what we tell everybody as far as how to get more information. And if you go to our website, which is spiritualconnectionsradio.com, and scroll down to the section for the Men's Spiritual Radio Hour, you'll see that we have the main website link for the program, and then underneath that we actually have a link that has information about all the workshops and all the programs around the world that are coming up this year. So those are two great resources for you to check out during the show. And with that, I will go ahead and just bring Mike in. Hey, Mike, how are you?
Oh, pretty good, Mark. How's it going?
It's going good. I mean, as you know, I'm down here in Florida, and I've always enjoyed the warm weather, probably more during the winter. This is the time of year for me. I'm not too comfortable, so, you know, because it's getting into the hundreds now and stuff like that. So I tell you what, though, I was thinking about this at work today, and that is if you're someone who likes lightning and thunderstorms, Florida is definitely the place to be because it rains on schedule almost every single day. So with that, why don't you go ahead and let's talk about who we have on tonight.
Okay. Well, tonight we have Dr. Richard Bartlett, and he is the author of Matrix Energetics, The Science and Art of Transformation and the Physics of Miracles, and also the Matrix Energetics Experience. And Dr. Bartlett also teaches Matrix Energetics, which is a conscious technology that shatters preconceptions of the seemingly solid universe, and it's also about how unlimited our potential change truly is. So if you're ready to embrace a reality where anything goes, miracles happen and nothing's beyond your reach, then you're ready for Matrix Energetics. So with that, Richard, we'd like to bring you onto the show. Welcome to the show. We're really happy to have you.
Thank you very much. It's good to be here.
Yeah, it's great to have you on, Richard.
Thank you.
So I was wondering if you could begin by telling us just a little bit about your first book that I mentioned there.
The first book was based upon experiences that started in 1996, where I had an event where I saw an archetype that you could call George Reeves or Superman, which is one of the great, I think, one of the great male archetypes. It's really funny, though, I think. Superman was much more wishy-washy than Clark Kent. You know, you had the way it was portrayed. Clark was kind of tough and decisive, and Superman was more laid back. I guess if you're Superman, you can afford to be laid back. But that's where it started. I actually was driving between Seattle, where I was going to naturopathy school. I decided at 44 to go back to medical school a second time. Not quite sure why I did that. And so I had to still make a living. I had a chiropractic degree in 87 from Parker Chiropractic College in Texas, Irving, Texas. And I still had to make a living, so I had to drive literally 13 hours one way between Seattle and Montana, where my practice still was. And it was on one of those drives where I drove all night and then was up all day working with clients that I had this event that kind of redefined my life. And it's funny because essentially this little girl was in front of me with her mother, and she had a lazy eye, and the mother was talking to me and saying, you know, we've already taken her to the neurologist. They said maybe she'll grow out of it. He said she's too young for surgery. We wouldn't really do that. And then she asked me what I thought. And I turned and I saw George Reeves as Superman there with his cape flapping in the wind and this whole thing. And I told her the story about George Reeves as Superman when they had an episode with a blind girl who was injured in an accident, became blind. The parents broke up over it. Father joined the Foreign Legion. The little girl then wrote in a contest to the Daily Planet about why I want to fly around the world with Superman. Well, she didn't really believe in Superman. She really just wanted to kind of blackmail the Daily Planet into getting her parents back together. She figured if she won, you know, then they would be embarrassed because she didn't believe Superman existed. Well, Superman was very shocked to find out that the little girl didn't believe he existed. So he proceeded to bend a bar around her, a steel bar from the fireplace, to show her that he was real. And once she realized he was real, they flew around the world together, and he got her eyesight back. This is really great. This is from the time of the 50s when the doctors were advising to smoke to relax. There was actually Camel cigarette commercials or whatever company it was in the commercials with the doctors smoking. So the doctor actually allows Superman with his x-ray vision to guide the hand of the surgeon. You'd never have this with the lawyers. And little girl gets her eyesight back, flies around the world. Superman's found her father. They get back together. There's a tearful scene of reunion. That's a great little 30-minute show with the cigarette commercials. So all of that I told the mother in real time. And understand, I was out of my mind. I was so tired and completely delirious and working. I was taking 31 credit hours a semester. I was doing labs on top of that. I was studying all night long on top of that, and then I was driving back and forth 13 hours one way to Montana and working all weekend and then driving back and going back to school on Monday morning.
Wow.
So kind of a Sufi version of enlightenment where you just spin around until you either throw up or you see God. and I guess I opted for the latter. God looked like Superman. Might have been an angel, might have been an archetype, might have just been me completely crazy from lack of sleep. But whatever it was, what happened is his x-ray vision went into the little girl, and his x-ray vision was yellow because in the comics it's yellow, and you have to go to the bell that something's happening. So it was yellow in my mind's eye, and I saw this blockage in this little girl's brain. It looked like just a gnarly bunch of cloudy stuff, and I touched my fingertip on her forehead where I saw this blockage, and something happened. Light shot across the optic pathways into her brain, and something bizarre occurred in an instant. And she started blinking her eyes at me, and then she said, "There's two of you." And she was seeing with what's called binocular vision, which is how you create stereoscopic vision. you have two reference frames that then get superimposed one over the other to create the appearance of depth. So she was seeing two images because her eyes were starting to function. Her brain was trying to process this, and over a period of a few hours, apparently it coalesced, and then she didn't have a lazy eye anymore. So that's how it began. Crazy as that sounds, that's what happened, and that's what I detail in the first. Yeah, is that a spiritual event? Hell, I don't know. It might have been the result of the extremely acidic Big Gulp coffee at the gas station on the way from Montana to Seattle. Who knows? But it was significant because it allowed me to notice something different, which is a key principle that we talk about in matrix energetics: notice what's different, not what's the same. That difference allowed me to make an association, and because I noticed this, it allowed me to do something different, or at least notice that something was different. Now, the next day, I had, I think 30 clients lined up or something like that. First person I touched, their body, their vertebrae, I was a chiropractor, their vertebrae moved back into position. Now, I was more than just a chiropractor. I was a weird chiropractor, and that's because my second child was born with bronchitis, asthma, allergies, and pneumonia. Every third week of his life, he would get deathly ill. And so when I was in chiropractic school, naturally I took him to the chiropractic instructors, and we had some really good ones. But I also took him to the medical doctors, which didn't seem to do a lot of good. They gave him medications that made him hyperactive, so he would bang his head on the tile floor in the bathroom, but he was still coughing. Didn't do a thing. And I took him to an acupuncturist. That didn't work so well because my son blocked, and the acupuncture needle went into the acupuncturist's arm, which that didn't work so well either. So at one point, what happened is I just actually decided, you know what? He came to me. I think it's up to me. I think I'm going to have to figure this out. And I told this story plenty, but, I mean, it's worth hearing. What I started doing is what a lot of people might not do. I took responsibility for it, and then I said, okay, what resources do I have? Real nice, another important thing, ask an open-ended question. It accesses the right brain. It accesses intuitive awareness. You can get awareness from outside of yourself. You can get answers. That's right in the Bible. Ask and you shall receive. Seek and you shall find. Knock on the door, shall be open. I think that's physics. So I did, and what came up was there was a whole section in the chiropractic library that nobody went to. It was kind of like, you know, in the Indiana Jones movie at the end where they put the Ark of the Covenant in the government building with all the boxes. Well, it was like that. There was this whole section covered with dust, nobody over there, you know. And I thought, what's this crazy place? And I looked, and there were all these very interesting titles that they weren't teaching in class. And I thought to myself, I said, well, wait a minute. If what they're teaching isn't working, then maybe I'd better learn what they're not teaching. Another key distinction. And so that's what I did. I would go to school all day long, and then I would go to the library, and until the library closed, I would study the books that they weren't teaching from. And I found I would look for the weirdest stuff. And I developed a habit where I would look in the front of the book, and if a bunch of people had checked out that book, I would close the book and not even look at it. If a few people had checked it out, I would open it and I would learn from it. If no one had checked it out, I kid, I would take it home because nobody would ever notice. But literally, that's how I developed my clinical knowledge and began to ask probing questions. Now, an interesting side effect occurred where people that came to me in the student clinic, you understand you have to get a certain number of visits in order to graduate. Well, you have a student clinic, and some people even pay their relatives, right, to come to the clinic so they can get their number of adjustments or their credit done. I didn't have to do that. Word got around that something was different about this guy, and I never even beat the pavements to try and get patients. I would show up on Saturday morning, and the place would be full of people wanting to see me. That did not, by the way, engender me respect or love with my peers. There were 74 of them. They were working really hard in this small town of Irving, Texas, home of the Dallas Cowboys, by the way, and more notably, importantly, the Dallas cheerleaders, Dallas Cowboy cheerleaders. But I didn't have to do that, and so they got really jealous. They even got me suspended from the clinic at one point because, well, again, I was doing things they couldn't do. They didn't understand it, didn't like it. But some of them wound up respecting me eventually and even referring to me. But the whole point is that I went on this, call it a spiritual journey, kind of a weird spiritual journey, to heal my son. And I think a lot of spiritual journeys are out of necessity. I don't necessarily think that we are, quote, spiritual by nature. I think we get beat into it or we have a dissatisfaction within us and we say, okay, how can I fill this hole? And, you know, we do it with food, we do it with sex, we do it with fast cars, we do it with video games, movies, we do it with all sorts of things. But that emptiness, that well, that deep part of us is always there and it's always aching to be answered. And I think that the answer that I was given, which was one of service, was out of necessity. So, of course, you could look at the viewpoint of, well, before I came into my life, I set this all up as a spiritual exploration, as a way of unfolding. And yeah, I think that might very well be valid. But whatever it is, it's not been built boring, and that's really important.
Well, it's just such a powerful story. How long were you in practice before you decided to move on to actually writing the books and starting to go out and teach others? And what did that transition look like?
Well, it wasn't that I decided to do it; it's that it happened. What happened is this. First, I thought, when this thing occurred, and by the way, that first day, people noticed something was different. I studied with Elizabeth Clare Prophet. She was my spiritual teacher, my friend. I was her doctor for 8 years. I lived in a spiritual community, but I also worked 15 hours a day, 7 days a week for $5 an hour. That was my labor of love. As a new doctor, I'd just graduated. The trouble was is the community wasn't real big on paying my debts, and my school loans got ignored. That created problems later, but that's neither here nor there. It was a really valuable experience. And because of the skill set that I developed in the clinic, that's what got me there. So at one point, I was serving in this community. I was seeing very sick people. I got known as a miracle worker, which I don't really think I am. I like to tell people, I'm a blue healer, not a healer, I'm a blue healer, and I keep trying to learn not to raise my leg to the furniture or to the house guest. I just like to make fun of that whole thing because when you just differentiate yourself out as something special, then you have to live up to that. And good luck with that. It's a constant struggle. It's kind of like performing without Viagra. Yeah?
Richard?
What's that?
Can you adjust the phone a little bit? We kind of lost you a little bit there.
Sure, just a moment here. All right. Where did we lose me at?
Well, we can hear you. It's just you got really, really soft. There you go. I think I can hear you now. There you go. That's a lot better. We could hear you. It's just it was very muffled, so.
Oh, sorry. Well, where did you last hear me at? And I'll try and pick up I'll editorialize.
Well, I think what you were saying is you said you were working in a spiritual community doing your work, and you were talking about the teacher that you were working with. You were talking about her name.
Elizabeth Clare Prophet, she is quite famous and some infamous, channeled the teachings of, quote, the Ascended Masters. I developed a relationship with her and with her teachings, and I wound up working in that community as a doctor, taking care of 650 people who were on staff, and I was working 7 days a week, 15 hours a day for $5 an hour. And again, I'm not complaining. That was a labor of love. It's something I was happy to do, something I learned tremendous things from, and I think something that has continued to bring forth, call it inner treasures, because service, I think, is its own reward. I've been somewhat successful later in life. But you were asking me, how did I get from being in the office, in the clinic, and working like that, to writing the book and then teaching? What happened was I got to Bass here, and I got there because, again, in that community I was working with, there were a lot of sick people that would come to see me, and they needed help, and some of them were in very desperate situations. And so I wound up doing things for them that I guess not a lot of people could do. I won't say I always succeeded, but I was always willing to try, and I would always try something new. That kind of reflects back to trying everything I could to fix my son back when he was sick, which finally I did find something, a technique that worked, and he was healed in 30 minutes. But again, that was only one answer out of a number of possible answers. So it was a constant journey and a sense of self-exploration. And at one point, I got frustrated with the chiropractic profession. They weren't that forward-looking, and I wasn't doing an insurance practice. I was doing a cash-only practice. And I wanted to do and say, what I said I was doing, like if I worked on somebody's heart, I didn't want to say I'm adjusting T2, a subluxation of T2, which is in one system associated with the heart. I wanted to say I was working on the heart. I'm just kind of honest that way. So what I did is I went back to medical school at 44. And so when I went to Bastyr, again, that's when this whole event occurred, because I was 13 hours away from where my original practice had been. And I had not established a practice in Seattle, so I did not have a license, so I had to go back and forth. So what happened is, over time, after several years, and thinking this was just me, I met Mark Dunn, who was he wound up teaching with me, but he was just a student at the naturopathic school, and he asked to study with me because of all the things that he'd seen that I knew and he'd heard about. And I wound up trying to teach him what I was doing. Now, it turned out he was a difficult student, which was actually a great benefit, because he made me really define what it was that I thought was happening, and he also made me look. I started to look in the physics, started in quantum physics, and now I've been through many, many areas of physics, trying to find an explanation or a model for why this had happened, what it meant, and then how could I then teach it or transfer it. So it was interaction with Mark that actually led me to make the distinctions that started me to write the book. And then the way I started writing the book is I just started taking the experiences and the understandings and the adventures or the clinical miracles, if you want, that occurred, and writing them down. And then at one point, I got involved. I met someone who came to the seminar who was a book publisher, and she offered to publish my book. Well, that book wasn't much of anything at the time. It was some scribbled, chapters. But we found somebody that oversaw the book, gave suggestions, and then I wrote the book based upon those suggestions. And what happened is this. The book came out on the same weekend that I was on Coast to Coast Radio, if you're familiar with that. With George Norrie. And George Norrie interviewed me, and in 2 hours of an interview, I went from being a person in my office teaching an occasional seminar to a person that you had to wait 6 months to get in to see me, and it became impossible to even continue in the office because there was no follow-up care. I'd see a person one time, and then I'd have to see him again 6 months later. So I realized at one point it was no longer viable, and then the seminars and the interest exploded at the same time, and a lot of that was from just being on that radio show and the public then becoming aware of me.
Oh, that's amazing. Go ahead, Mike.
So one thing I'd like to ask you is if you were to describe matrix energetics to somebody that had never heard of it before, or somebody that was just curious, what in a nutshell would you explain to somebody to pique their interest?
Yeah, I don't worry about piquing people's interest anymore. but if I were, I mean, I really don't, because it's very difficult to define something that is somewhat inexplicable other than through an experiential reference. People that contact this field, and I think it's a field of information. I'd start by saying I think this is a field of information that is pretty much a specialized part of the universal field or Akashic field, whatever you want to call it, the zero point field, although I don't think that's an accurate reference, and that this field effect then has taken on intelligence and awareness. Rupert Sheldrake talks about morphic fields. These are fields that imprint information to the degree that they become increasingly more intricate and complex and more conscious and evolved. And so these fields themselves are kind of like software that carry information, and when you tap into that, just like software, you are actually able to interact with that information, to download it, to duplicate it, and to experience it. So for me, it's a field effect. For Einstein, quantum physics was a field effect. So once you get an understanding of that, I will tell you that what Richard Feynman said, which if you know who he was a physicist, and he said that nature is quantum. Well, for me, that begins and ends any argument about our physicality, because if nature is quantum, and if you take what Jesus said, a house divided against itself cannot stand, then you realize that if it's our bottom, if our basement membrane of our reality is photons, which, by the way, those are funny, they're smeared out over all time and space until you observe them and then collapse them into the one place that you're looking. That's essentially what it says. That's what we are as well. And then I also had a friend, Carl Pribram, who was a neuropsychiatrist, neurophysiologist, and he was featured in the book, The Holographic Universe. And what Carl said is there is no out there. It is actually a construct of our awareness based upon our perceptual biases or our blinders of our sensory awareness, and then how we process that through our conscious mind and how our left brain or our conscious awareness pays attention to what is specific to our beliefs and our awareness of what reality consists of. So really, what matrix energetics can be is an unfolding or a consciousness technology that allows for you to develop a greater appreciation of self as a part of a greater whole that you can actually interface with, interact with, and pretty much become one with.
So, So would you basically say that you're actually accessing a different dimensional space, and that you're also not only raising your own vibration when you're working with people, but you're also raising, you know, helping to raise the vibration of the person that's being worked on, so that, you know, you have clear mind and more access to the higher self of both you and the other person, that all these energies and these different things can come through you, almost kind of like if you would have talked about it, you know, 60, 70 years ago. Edgar Cayce, you know, had like, you know, all these different remedies and things that came to him in his sleep, but now you fast forward 70 years, we're going right to the source of where he's getting this stuff.
Well, sometimes we are. You know, it's actually interesting because I was in a school of metaphysics out of St. Louis, Missouri, that knew how to train people to access those same levels that Cayce accessed. And that there is a process, and I still don't see very many people able to do that, but there was a way to do it. What's not known is at the same time as Cayce, by the way, in France, there was a French hypnotist that was training, was doing this with a number of people and getting the same results where they would speak like Cayce and they'd access the universal records. The remote viewers also were able to do that to some degree as well, and I was trained by one of the military remote viewers, Lynn Buchanan, which is no large part of what I'm teaching or doing, but however, it is interesting that you're accessing a matrix or a grid of information where all information resides, and you can tap into that, and you can interact with it to the degree where you can change change your life, heal someone, or et cetera. Now, the model that you propose, I don't necessarily agree with, and I might have a long time ago, but what you're talking about is an energetic model, and for me, that is an electromagnetic model, and I think we're dealing more in what I would call a spectrum of information. Information is not the electromagnetic spectrum, and this is one of the problems that we have. It can't be measured by our current electromagnetic instruments. All of our instrumentation is electrical in nature, and it's funny because we're trying to measure something that is essentially an electromagnetic phenomenon with electromagnetic instrumentation, which is, by the way, one of the reasons that Einstein said that nothing can be perceived to go faster than the speed of light. He didn't say nothing could go faster than the speed of light. He said it couldn't be perceived to go faster than the speed of light, and this is because the speed of light itself is an electromagnetic measurement. So we can't measure something with our own instruments that exists, and we can't actually determine something that exists outside of our measurement. So that goes to the very question for me of reality in general. If your sensory awareness thinks reality, and your question about dimensions, if your sensory awareness thinks you have access to only linear time space, a three-dimensional awareness, call it fourth dimension if you want to add time, then yes, you could say that you're accessing extra-dimensional capabilities or extra-dimensional information that dwells outside of the normal sensory apparatus or perceptions of the individual. But it's not so much a transfer of energy or raising vibrations. It's a more, if you go into the ocean and I go into the ocean, we'll both have an experience of the ocean. Now, that's not to say that you might go deeper, you might swim better, you might be in a warmer part than me. The fish would be swimming against you, but maybe not against me. They're there, but I'm not going to experience them. My perceptions are going to be different. So maybe you could call that a difference in vibration, since everything you could say in the electromagnetic spectrum is vibration. It's frequency and amplitude. So I think more what we're talking about, and this is not well known in the West, but the Russians have a model called torsion field physics. Torsion is basically movement, or it's a spiral vortex, and the theory is that everything in the universe is composed of this torsion, and then the torsion then, when it is released into physical dimensions, it can be measured as electromagnetism and the other forces. So for me, that's Richard. Fundamental. Yes.
Let me take you in a different direction. I love the explanation and everything on that. The question I would have from a very practical standpoint, you and I will just role model for a second. You can be one of your graduated certified students, and I'll be a client walking into your storefront or the back end of some spiritual store, wherever they're working. What am I showing up to have work on, and what exactly would you be doing to work on me?
It's a great question. Well, one of the things that's interesting, is this Mike or Mark? I'm sorry.
This is Mark.
Hi, Mark. Okay, so Mark, one of the interesting things about that, if you've ever seen Melissa or I online or on YouTube or whatever, we don't really have to do anything to explain anything other than maybe explain why they suddenly became unconscious. This field interacts with people without a conscious, focused intent to do something. And the idea of doing something actually will limit the expression of what's possible to be done. You know, it's like people weren't coming to Jesus and say, work on my knee. They were saying, heal me, master, or whatever, and I'm not equating with a master. But what he always would do is he would turn that back on the individual, and he would say to them, your faith has made you whole. So the idea of wholeness, I think, is what we're talking about, not as a division of health and disease, but as a natural expression of a totality of access to your own individual completeness. Now, that doesn't necessarily mean, it can mean, it doesn't mean your pain would all go away, or it doesn't mean your cancer would be healed on the instant, or the blind would see or the lame would walk or any of that. It could mean that. We have seen things like that. But you can't promise anything like that. But what I do think, and this is why I talk about the physics, I think that what people experience is a transformation of their awareness, and that can show up differently for each and every individual, wherein they realize that reality has a larger and broader spectrum than what they have been taught to perceive. And if anything that I would say people get out of it, they consistently get that. Now, like I said, there are all sorts of healing miracles and bizarre stories associated with this, but that's not something that we promote as this is what this is. In fact, anytime you define what Melissa and I are doing, what all these people across the world are teaching or are doing, you're defining it out of existence, essentially. You put brackets around an experience. Now the experience only exists within the confines of the brackets. If you're able to transcend the brackets and go to an awareness where I don't know what's going to show up in the next moment, but A, I'm going to be able to notice what's different, not what's the same, and B, it's going to continue to happen. It's not based upon a treatment or a transfer of energy that has a beginning and an end point. It has an awareness front, just like getting into the ocean. Once you get into the ocean, if you stay in the ocean, you're always in the ocean. The waves crashing against your legs, they may differ. Like I said, you may be in a cold area, you may be in a warmer area, a deeper area, or the waves may be thicker or harder, but it's still the ocean. So it's the idea, true idea, of a spiritual awareness where you're dropping into the ocean of being and experiencing what is possible from an altered state of perception. Every mystical experience, no matter where or what, involves altered consciousness, altered perception. If you can alter your perception, your disease could be healed. If you alter your perception, your relationship could change for the better. Your job, you'd suddenly realize, I don't want to do this, I want to do that, and your job just opens up, looks magical. It's the difference between observing life as a series of events and obstructions or things to overcome or goals to attain, and being in a flow with the information, the love, if you will, of the universe, being embraced in that and being able to trust that flow enough to let go. And in trusting and letting go, you could experience all the things. You could experience a cancer healing or the blind seeing or the lame walking or your finances being healed, whatever. It's all up for grabs, but it occurs within you in your relationship to the field of possibility, which is, again, unique to your individual spirit, soul, mind, body, your individual circumstances. Mm-hmm. Does that make some sense?
Yes, it does. I think the thing I like the most about what you said is that for you to even put it in a container almost restricts to what it could be. And
that's
I think it's just really powerful. Go ahead, Mike.
So you got the wheels turning in my brain here now, too.
great.
So if you take a look at it from a healing perspective, if you take a look at our DNA and our cells and everything and the fact that, you know, the human body has its own self-healing capabilities, would you say once you get into that like you said, that altered state of thinking and that openness of the mind to possibilities of what is, that, you know, once you get that, that your DNA and your cells and everything start operating in a way that they're actually designed to do. They're just taking that nourishment from the that energy around you, like you said, that information, and just allowing that healing to happen. Like, we're blocking it with our mind, so to speak, when we're in places of disease and so forth.
Well, sometimes places of disease can be a healing. I've seen many people, because I've been a doctor for 20 years, come into my office with a terminal cancer. And some of them were playing the victim and they were very concerned and scared, and rightfully so. I'd be terrified out of my mind. But the thing is, some of them actually said, I'm so glad that I got this cancer because now I know what it truly means to be alive, and I appreciate every moment of my life like it's a new beginning. Those people, interestingly enough, often their cancers go away because they're no longer needed, because what was poking at them to get their attention got their attention. The universe has done its job, and now the flow can continue. The same thing with an entry, an accident, or whatever. I think all of these things are setups from our higher spirit, if you want to. I don't like to use the word higher self or anything like that. What if you're short and you can't reach your higher self? You have to stand on a ladder or something. I like what Mark Dunn said. He said, if my higher self screws up too many times, then I fire that one and hire another, you know. Because I think we can take these terminologies too seriously, and again, that becomes like a restrictive bracket. There's a lot of humor in matrix energetics, and there's humility. And I'd say the thing that makes the difference is the humor and the humility and the sense of not knowing, but yet the courage to go forth anyway, to find out, to keep exploring, to desire greatly, but also to let go of the desire enough to stay in the flow of what can occur in the next moment. And that in itself, to me, is truly a healing. That's beyond any, quote, physical healing that anyone could have happen. That's what it talks about. Jesus would talk about the spirit is healed, and from that flows all things. From that flows all what you would call healing. Again, anytime you call something healing, you bracket it off, and you put it in a direct polarity and relationship with not healing or with disease. If you can do away with healing and do away with disease as your markers for whether something has changed, and then you're able to notice incremental patterns of gray within what you might call chaos, you start to be able to navigate towards opening more awareness. Now, more awareness, again, might take you out of embodiment as a cancer, or the cancer might disappear and it might take you to a completely different place. I don't think healing is actually freedom from distress or disease or freedom from challenge. I think challenges and even to some degree stress and disease are indicators or markers in consciousness for us to pay attention and to change the direction of our awareness.
Wow. Well, I have one more quick question for you as well. Now, I do music and sound healings for people and meditation groups and so forth. Now, have you seen music and sound play a part in the matrix energetics with the work that you do?
Oh, God, it's a huge part. I was a bass player before I was a doctor. I started out age 13 to 27. I played bass for a living until disco came in, and I couldn't get a job anymore because they would just play the jukebox. And my first child was born, so I had to become a doctor. Yes, I think that basically what we're dealing with is light, information, and resonance. Now, resonance for musicians is what's key, right? It's the difference between this interval and that interval, or this space and time, what you call a rhythm. The resonances encode information, and the information can change the DNA. I'm actually working on a series of frequency pieces. We have something called the 21 frequencies in matrix energetics, something that came to me, which are really more special perturbations of the field as intelligences or as awarenesses that have their own identity and their own principles and their own specific functions. But I'm channeling that music, essentially. I now play keyboards and they have huge orchestral libraries and whatever. That's a lot of what I focus on. For me, the field is music. For me, it is rhythm and oscillation and pulsation and frequency. That's music. So I think music is, as a musician, of course, one to the other, I think it's primary, and I think it is a great source of healing and uplifting and empowerment for mankind.
Yeah, definitely. I really enjoy the work that I do, and I do the same thing. I channel a lot of the music through my my electric keyboards myself, and you know, just the response I've gotten from my clients that I've worked on, and Mark has been a big client of mine. Mark's had a lot of sessions with me, and you know, I've even done some over Skype, and it's just amazing that the with the high frequencies that I get into with the music, my aim is to help open people at their heart center, you know, so that when they're done listening or they get to that point where their minds calm down and their thought processes are calmed down, that they can think a little clearer and be in a little more of a relaxed state. You know, maybe their heart beats a little bit slower than it was when we started. And I just really enjoy experimenting with it and working with it with people, and I loved hearing your experiences with it as well. It's something that when you're in the heart of playing, like you just feel you're in a different space. Like you just, you just can't describe it sometimes, you know what I mean?
No, and it's a great blessing and a joy, because music does access the field of the heart, which we talk a lot about in Matrix Energetics. We talk about it as the space of no space. It's like we're not talking about the heart chakra. We're not talking about the electromagnetic field around the heart. We're not talking about the physical heart. We're talking about this point of reference that has access to the all through the or to the from the nothing into the all. So it's a nexus point where all distinctions disappear. When that happens, and music is great for this, if it has the right resonances, you stop thinking. And in the heart, I don't even think there's thought or emotion. I think thought and emotion are one and the same. David Bohm talked about that, the great physicist. He said that most people have thoughts. They don't actually think. And he says most habituated thoughts, as they call emotions, just are thoughts that have a charge attached to them. But music can take you, the right kind of music can take you outside of that, outside of yourself, and give you a direct connection with the resonance that ties into that particular field, and it can indeed heal. And so I think it's immensely important. You might be very interested. There's a Russian physicist who is doing amazing work. His name is Peter I'm going to say his name wrong because I can't pronounce it, but it's Peter Gariev, G-A-R-I-A-E-V. His website is wavegenetics.org. Now, what he's doing is he's taking someone's picture or their umbilical cord blood or whatever, but let's just talk about a picture. Say someone has a stroke when they're 47, and they've got a picture of being healthy when they were, say, 2. You can send him that picture. He will then encode the DNA information, which I think is informational-based, off of the picture as waveforms. He will then pass that through some sort of quantum computer that he has, and he will create a sound file that contains all the information of the resonances of the healthy DNA patterns for the individual. They can then play that sound file and actually experience healing from the stroke. He's got examples of that on his website. He has changed the DNA of even species by creating an information. He had one rat. They deliberately destroyed the rat's pancreas with chemicals, and then he took the healthy information from another rat, encoded that, played that information to the diseased rat, the one with the destroyed pancreas, and their pancreas in 4 days regrew. Now that to me is getting where I want to go. And I'm still trying to understand that, because I believe that this information, this resonance, this torsion and spin that I'm talking about is the primary layer of creation that accesses those kinds of miracles. And I think music is, again, another vehicle for that. But that type of music, the music of the DNA, I don't think the DNA, by the way, encodes for information. I think the DNA is actually an antenna, and the information is in the field.
Oh, okay. Okay. Yeah, that's a good way to think of it.
They're
absorbing it.
Yeah.
I would almost say in a situation like this. Go ahead, Richard.
Yeah, it picks up the information, but how you resonate, what your beliefs are, what your perceptual biases are, your social, your culture, your religious, your parents, your programming is going to determine what you're able to resonate with and how much of that information you're able to encode to change your DNA.
Yeah, what I was going to say is that you'd almost you would almost envision that if you could be the person holding the space for that individual, that you could almost reach back to when they were a child, anchor that point, then anchor where they are and just connect it and just move that corrected action right into their field now just by just the process of intention. So
you have
almost
just
like
described. Yes. You've just described something we call the two-point in time travel.
Wow. Yeah. So
that's exactly the idea. Yeah, that's exactly the idea.
Yeah. It just one of the things that I've always noticed about, you know, one of the gifts that I've had since I've started my spiritual opening is access to what I would call the field of knowledge.
Yes.
And that is,
yes,
I just know stuff. lots of times the way it comes up is I'll go hear, you know, anybody lecture, and I'm not saying that any of these people are right or wrong, but, you know, like I'll go listen to Wayne Dyer or the guy who wrote The Power of Now, Eckhart Tolle, or I can read something from, you know, some spiritual teacher, and I can tell if it's right or wrong, even though I have never studied it. So it's that
it's
information.
That
I just gave you that you said kind of describes something that you're aware of, I don't have any training in that. I just simply connected with that as a solution.
No, and that's right. And I didn't really have any training in it either. These things, I didn't put together this seminar to teach something, to have a technique, to make money or whatever. This stuff unfolded through a number of years of asking open-ended questions and then resonating with the answers that presented to themselves over time. And then following that like a piece of music through its modulations, through its key changes, through the chorus and to the coda. And we're not at the coda yet. One of my teachers who I studied with, he said, I have 3 drops of knowledge in the universal bucket. He says, and I'm working on the 4th drop, but the darn bucket keeps getting bigger. And that's the way it feels.
Yeah. There was a question that I wanted to ask you about, you know, because I was kind of trying to put the pieces together, Richard. And that is, you had said, and I had remembered the name when you said it, was the woman that you had studied with when you first got started. What was her name?
Oh, you're talking about Elizabeth Clare Prophet, my spiritual teacher, or someone else?
It was the one that you said was really famous that everybody knows.
Oh, it was probably Elizabeth Clare Prophet. She was definitely famous in the spiritual community in the world. She was also infamous to some because of the we believed at one point that the Russians were going to bomb and we were building shelters up in the heart of Montana, and that never happened, thank goodness. I don't know that it could not have happened. I wouldn't say that wasn't a distinct possibility at that time in the political climate. But thank goodness nothing like that happened.
Yeah, so I guess what I was trying to – I know you said a lot of these different things in your life have happened because of circumstances and having to come up with a solution for something in life that was a challenge for you at the time. I was just wondering how you ended up actually being in that community and actually learning from her.
It's a great question. At one point, I got obsessed with something called a candle concentration, where you stare at a candle flame and attempt to make a mark on a piece of paper every time that you have a thought or a feeling or a sensation. I started out with making 210 minutes and got down to about 10 after a few months. Well, I was in a building where I think it was a bookstore, and the back door, which was private, was open, and I saw this, what's called the chart of the I Am Presence. It was this thing from her organization, the Summit Lighthouse, and I thought it was an advanced candle concentration. And so I asked about it, and she said, no, this is something Elizabeth Clare Prophet teaches. Well, I looked at her book, and I scoffed at it, and it was very funny because I wasn't interested at all, although I did buy the book, if I remember right. And that night in my dream, for goodness sakes, she was there in Oklahoma City. That's where I was. I had a dream that I was running barefoot through the streets of Oklahoma City, and I'm half blind without my glasses, and I was looking for Elizabeth Clare Prophet desperately. Can you tell me where she is? I can't find her. It was bizarre for a kid that was basically a rock musician at the time, but that's what happened, and that got my attention pretty heavily. And then I started paying attention and noticing. And then a series of things happened that are just absolutely too bizarre to go into in the amount of time. But basically, one step led to another. You know, I like to talk about in Live and Let Die, the Roger Moore, you know, Bond flick, which is probably the best Roger Moore pickle. You know that scene where all the alligators or crocodiles, whatever they are lined up in a row and the guy jumps over them?
Yep.
You remember? That was
a
real scene.
Yeah.
That was a real scene. People may not know this, but what happened is the stuntman was there. He saw their heads lined up like that and decided to go for it. And that's kind of how life has been for me. The crocodiles all line up, and I jumped over their heads.
Wow. Well, let me ask one last question. I'll hand off to Mike to actually ask closing show. But what is the biggest life lesson for you so far in life so far?
Oh boy! Don't be arrogant. Trust. Let go. And believe that the next step or the next pebble in the stream is going to show up where you're going to get across that stream safely.
That's excellent. Thank you. Go ahead, Mike.
Boy, yeah, there was just so much great information tonight. So would you say that you you feel that you're coming across like as you work more with this field, do you find yourself coming across what you would call new discoveries for yourself from time to time, or like a new energy field or something that catches your eye, like as you go along?
What starts to happen, and it comes out of necessity, because, for instance, I'm doing Skype sessions with clients all over the world, I will run out of, I need to be more, I need to do more, I want to serve more. It's the desire to serve more, and this is something one of my spiritual teachers told me, the reward for service is more service. And I thought, when I was working 15 hours a day, 7 days a week, I thought that was a terrible answer. But then I realized after meditating, it means more ability to serve. So it means a continual unfolding of ability and answers, and it is literally a pathway to miracles and to an open door into progressive revelation of awareness. So, yes, I think the open-ended question, and like Jesus said, staying like a little child and then trusting that the universe will actually give you what you're asking for is the key thing that keeps pulling me forward.
Wow, yeah. It reminds me again of Casey, you know, doing those 14,000 readings in his lifetime. You know, it's just amazing, you know, how much we can do when we put our minds to it.
Well, do you know that Casey actually had read the Bible, the New Testament, for every year that he was alive, he'd read it one time. And one day he was lying underneath a tree, and he was thinking, I want to do something to serve mankind. And he was inspired by this biblical reading that he'd been doing and the archetype or icon of Jesus. And this angel, this beautiful emerald angel lady, showed up and said, what would you have of me, my son? And he says, I want to serve mankind. And she nodded and smiled at him and said, to you it is given, and disappeared. And that's when it all began, shortly after that.
Mm.
Wow. That's amazing. Well, it was great having you on the show, Richard. Let's just let everybody know that if you want to find out more about his work, his events and everything, his website is listed up there. Just so I got this right, Richard, it's matrixenergetics.com, and that's up on our website, Spiritual Connections Radio. And then there's a special link we have up on our site directly under the website for the doctor that has all his lectures and classes and everything are listed in the article that's accessible through the link. So make sure to check that out.
Yeah, I'm sorry. I just want to say one thing. Melissa Joy, my co-partner and teacher, is integral to everything I do, and I wouldn't even want to emphasize myself over anyone else, but if I were to emphasize anyone, it would be Melissa. So please realize, everyone listening, but it's not about me, and it never has been, although it might seem to be, because I'm kind of a focus sometimes for this, but Melissa and I together, what we create as a female and male yin-yang, kind of Tom and Jerry, Jerry Lewis and Dean Martin sort of combo, is unique in all the world, and just come find out about that. She is a miracle as well.
That's excellent, and for everybody that's listening, we're excited to announce that we're going to have Richard and Melissa on our main show, Spiritual Connections Radio, on August Monday the 4th at 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, where we'll be interviewing both of them. That specific interview will actually be talking more about the program, and of course, will be picking at Melissa's brain with all kinds of great stuff and watching the interactions of you and Melissa on the show together. So we're really looking forward to that, and that's going to be right here on Spiritual Connections Radio on Monday, August 4th at 8 p.m. So make sure to tune in and catch that. So thank you, Richard. Just an incredible interview, and it was great having you on. And it's funny, you know, I've done thousands and thousands of interviews, and, you know, I always think they're going to turn out a certain way, and your interview was completely different in an amazing way. So thank you for being here and for taking time. For anybody who was listening earlier, it took us almost half a year to have Richard on because of how busy he's traveling and all the work he does. So with Melissa and everything. So thank you, Richard. And as always, Mike, it's great to have you on the show.
Oh, thank you.
And just want to let everybody know you've been listening to Spiritual Connections Radio, and this is the Men's Spiritual Hour. Good night, Richard. Thanks a lot.
Robert. Thank you, Mike.
All right.
Thank you.
Good night, everybody.
The cost left my heart broken, so I had it closed for repairs. Wandering in my desert, you're